The boundaries have been broken.
Welcome to Vanguard Radio.
I believe that your primitive cerebrum kept trying to wake up. Deep in the belly of the Quad. This is Jeff Beck. I'm your host for
The Truth Is No Defense.
Welcome to the broadcast. This is the 18th edition of The Truth Is No Defense. They wanted me to be another Washington, said the defeated and would-be Emperor Napoleon Bonaparte. Napoleon was once hailed as the general which saved France's Republican Revolution. Yet, in the end, he wanted to be an emperor. And so he waged a war of expansion across Europe, which ultimately led to his defeat. In contrast, George Washington, as I trust all listening tonight know, was the general that led a war of independence or revolution on behalf of the 13 British colonies. Upon victory, the general refused to rule as a king or a dictator, but instead relinquished power to Congress. Later, he was elected president, served two terms, and then retired to private life. Washington, any sober evaluation of political science reveals, is the great exception. An ambitious man that refused the scepter of power. Yet for every Washington, there are a million Napoleons. Power is, whether acknowledged so or not, always concentrated in the hands of a few, or in the process of being consolidated into the hands of a few. This power, in turn, serves the ruling clique's interests, interests which might be political, religious, financial, or, in some cases, racial. It was quite a noble thing of Washington to refuse the sword of power. Yet, in a way, he did a great disservice to our people. His example perpetuated a myth that power rests in the hands of the governed. Despite this error, America, in 1799, the year Washington died, was in a most advantageous position. We had before us a vast continent and a youthful and restless race. What power and authority was exercised in the young republic was local rather than national, though it could be quite authoritarian. For example, the local sheriff keeping order with his six-shooter, or the many federal forts strategically placed on the frontier, all staffed with armed men under the command of a military officer. This authoritarian system worked for the benefit of white Americans. Washington's example of surrendering power merely distributed it across the unsettled country, rather than having it put exclusively in New York or Boston. But in our time, especially after World War II, power was seized from local authorities and put into the hands of a few. And don't be fooled into thinking that this power now rests in the hands of Congress, or even the presidency. Those institutions are merely the electoral decoration of a dictatorship. America is no more democratic than Iraq. Iraq before or after Saddam Hussein. Accordingly, now that power is centralized into the hands of a few, We hear much talk today about the corrupt local political machines, like Boss Tweed's Tammany Hall, based in New York City in the 19th century, or the Tom Pendergast machine in Kansas City in the 1920s and 30s. But most often we hear about the evil state governments in the South, which erected apartheid laws to keep white society safe from black predation. Regardless, let's be clear, these political machines and the southern states were not democratic. Yet, their rule benefited whites. My own family lived in Kansas City during the Pendergast era, and my mother often told me how the democratic process operated back then. If you wanted coal to cook your food and heat your home, then vote for the Democratic Party, which in those days meant the Pendergast machine. If you voted for them, you'd have plenty of coal. The Democratic Party, that is, the Pendergast machine, also distributed jobs and food to the needy, in return for votes, of course. Is this democratic? Yet today, you don't even get a bag of coal for your vote. This seems to me a backward step. It might be noted that in 1934, Tom Pendergast hand-picked Harry Truman as the U.S. Senate candidate from Missouri. Also worth noting, upon the death of Franklin Roosevelt, it was Truman that became the 34th President of the United States. Now ask yourself, what hand chose George W. Bush to be president? Regardless, race is the crucial difference between the Iraqi dictatorship and the current one in charge of the U.S. Life in the U.S. has been and still is better than it is in Iraq because it is populated with whites, not because it is a supposed democracy. Take away the whites and the U.S. is no different from Iraq or Zimbabwe. In both states, that is, Iraq and the United States, if you stay out of the regime's way, then you are safe. In Iraq, this meant no criticism of Saddam Hussein's interests or that of his family and tribe. In the U.S., it means submitting to a protean multicultural orthodoxy, which most often means surrendering to the wishes of Jews, blacks, and mestizos, no matter how many crimes they commit against the shrieking white majority. In both cases, if you violated the dictatorship's rules, then you might be fired, jailed, or perhaps murdered. You know, in many ways, the Hussein type of dictatorship is better than the current U.S. style. For the mentality of the Hussein regime is more easily understood. It is more human. It is more personal. It is more visceral. It rests mainly in the mind and control of one man, rather than being masked behind the facade of Congress and the presidency. The dictatorship in the U.S. operates behind the curtain, whereas in Iraq, it was right out in the open. The rules in the American dictatorship shift and are never fully defined, leaving one in a state where you don't know if you're violating some rule or not. Yet in Hussein's Iraq, I suspect, it was pretty clear where the lines of authority stood. So, you think we live in a democracy. You think Congress and the presidency reflect the wishes of the populace. Well, what are the wishes of the populace? Is it those desires and opinions that the electronic media presents to the public? Is it those opinions and ideas that are shaped day after day by the propaganda state? Even when propaganda fails to convince the public, the ruling clique simply do as they please. I ask you, advocates of democracy, is there anything democratic about this nation's immigration policy? Is there anything democratic about the agenda of the Jewish media? Is there anything democratic about the hundreds of executive orders issued by Bush and Clinton? Is there anything democratic about the way this war is being governed? Is there anything democratic about affirmative action laws or housing laws? Is there anything democratic about the operation of the Federal Reserve System? How are such laws and institutions a reflection of popular democratic will? You know, dictatorships are not necessarily tyrannical, and they are not uniformly a dystopia. In fact, they may feature libertarian aspects. Of course, as long as you know where the boundaries exist. In Hussein's Iraq, nightclubs, alcohol, most religious sects, and commercial activity were free to operate, probably freer than in the United States. In other cases, a dictatorship might defend the traditional interests of a nation, as was the case in Franco Spain, where birth rates rose to 5% and the church pews were filled with the faithful. Franco Spain suppressed destructive trends like homosexuality and prostitution. Franco said that his regime was based on, quote, bayonets and blood, not on hypocritical elections, end quote. Compared to the mess Spain and the rest of Europe finds itself in today, they would be far better off with Franco than the current crop of Democrats and parliamentarians. Folks, we won't get out of this mess by voting, lobbying, or writing congressmen. We, it seems, need a ruler capable of managing a state of exception, that is, managing in a state of emergency. One that will apply extraordinary powers to clean up the mess we're in. Yet, importantly, won't just patch up a worn-out suit of clothes, but instead create a new garment for us to wear. If you follow these arguments, if you understand the true nature of power in the U.S., then you must also realize that democratic reform is impossible. Dictators either relinquish power voluntarily or they are forcibly removed. They are never voted out of power. One man who had much to say about power was Carl Schmitt. Schmitt was a political scientist from Germany. He lived from 1888 to 1985. He has many interesting things to say, but in particular, this is a well-known quote of what he had to say about dictatorships and democratic constitutions. Quote, "If the constitutional state is democratic, then every exceptional negation of democratic principles, that is, every exercise of state power independent of the approval of the majority, can be called dictatorship." End quote. This axiom defines the American dictatorship we currently have exactly. What is majoritarian about our immigration and tax policies? What is majoritarian about the swelling scope of government regulation? In our current situation, fooled as many are about the nature of power and rule in America, there is a great temptation to fall in with groups dedicated to the status quo. Or, as they might say, restoration of democracy, or law, or the Constitution. Lobbying and activist political organizations like, say, the Minutemen, are satellites orbiting a large planet. Eventually, their orbit degrades and they crash into the larger body, becoming part of the greater mass. Many listening tonight know that James Gilchrist, the director of the Minuteman Project, peddled his notoriety into a bid for Congress in 2006. We certainly don't need any more politicians or organizations which sell out for a morsel of power. Building a new set of institutions in parallel to the current regime is a necessity for white survival. That is why I contribute my time and energy to create content for VNN. And I'm sure Stan and the other contributors on Goyfire and the Hawthorne Report feel likewise. Creating media is a crucial first step to establishing ourselves as a force separate from the corrupt system, killing our race. Yet, as the greater white nationalist movement grows, as it surely will do, as violence from blacks and mestizos increases, let's not repeat the mistakes that allowed Jews and other non-whites to capture our institutions and land. Democracy is just not a system capable of protecting our race. Thanks for listening.
Radio, waking you up.